VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And thank you for joining us on Crosstalk here on VCY America. You may not know this, but August marks the annual observance of National Immunization Awareness Month. However, since the COVID shot came out, there's a greater skepticism on the part of many on whether one should readily accept all the shots and boosters recommended by the FDA and the CDC. Individuals are asking more questions, and it's not only about the COVID shot, but as children are starting up in a new school year and parents are being told what shots are mandatory, and many parents are left wondering, all these doses for my child, am I making the right decision? Are there options available to me? Are there side effects I should consider? Do I obtain the new COVID shot for my child? What about a vaccination for HPV? What about, and the questions go on. Now, we're not here today to tell you what you should or should not do, as everyone has their own individual needs and concerns. But our guest today is very strongly advocating on informed consent and has things for you to think about. Joining us today, we welcome back Barbara Lowe Fisher, president of the National Vaccine Information Center. They're a nonprofit charity that she co-founded with parents of DPT, vaccine-injured children, back in 1982. Their organization is a national grassroots movement, public information campaign to institute vaccine safety reforms, informed consent protections in the public health system. Barbara has researched, she has analyzed, publicly articulated the major issues involving the science, the policy, the laws, ethics, and politics of vaccination to become one of the world's leading non-medical consumer advocacy experts on the subject. Barbara, so good to have you back here on Crosstalk.
Oh, thanks so much. Yes, there's so much going on, and as you mentioned, there is a drop in confidence across the board in this country of American adults who, for example, only 40% of U.S. adults agree that it is, quote, extremely important for parents to vaccinate their children. This is a 25% drop in parent interest in vaccines for children over the past two decades. And what's interesting in this latest Gallup survey that was published in July of this year, there is a divide, it looks like, ideologically. You have a much greater number of people who identify as Republican or Republican-leading independents being more skeptical of the safety and necessity and effectiveness of vaccines than those who identify as Democrats or Democrat-leaning independents. I mean, it's a stark difference. In 2019, only 12% of Republicans believe that vaccines are more dangerous than the diseases, but now 31% believe that, while only 5% of Democrats believe that. So, and it divides with the COVID shot. Only 10% of Republican parents intend to give their young children a COVID shot, while 90% of Democrats said they intend to give their child a COVID shot. So this shows this stark difference in how parents perceive vaccination, divided among in terms of ideology or at least political leaning. But the overall message is that all Americans are less likely to agree that the government should require childhood vaccinations. 81% of Americans backed childhood vaccine mandates in 1991. And today, across the board, only 52% support mandates. In 2024, we are coming up on a tipping point here where it potentially in the next few years you're going to have more people who do not support childhood vaccine mandates than do support them. And, of course, this is an issue that NVIC has been working on educating legislators for many, many years to try to get informed consent protections in vaccine laws that govern attendance to school. And of course, during COVID, the vaccine mandate covered a lot more, including participation in society at a number of different levels, including having a job. So it's of interest to us that we're seeing this sort of backing off of this idea that the government should be forcing the use of vaccines. There was another survey that just came out. Journal of the American Medical Association found that Americans' trust in medical doctors and hospitals declined significantly during the COVID pandemic. It dropped. They surveyed about 500,000 American adults, And they found that there was a decline from 71% of trust in doctors and hospitals in April 2020, that dropped to 40% of trust in doctors and hospitals in January of 2024. And they feel that this lack of trust, or this drop in trust in physicians and hospitals, was associated with the likelihood of getting a COVID shot and a flu shot. So the whole COVID pandemic, which saw this sort of, you know, the lockdowns and the masking, and then eventually the forced vaccination, the forced use of COVID shots, has really had a profound effect on the trust in U.S. doctors and hospitals. And so this is big news.
Yeah, it really is big news. And when the surveys are showing that, and again, we're not saying that all doctors, all hospitals, there are many that are very good and excel in their profession. They care about their patients. They care about information going to their patients. But a number of doctors even looked at this, and they're attributing this to the infusion of politics into medicine. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, there's no question that those that people who are involved in the mass vaccination infrastructure, the program, specifically medical doctors, public health officials, certainly the pharmaceutical companies and other institutions, academic institutions that are behind mandatory vaccination, the mandatory vaccination concept, they have tried to define the opposition of people in terms of politics. And as I said in the outset with the survey, they do show, the Gallup survey certainly did show that there was more skepticism about vaccine safety and effectiveness and necessity on the part of those who identified as Republicans or Republican-leaning independents compared to Democrats. So I think part of the reason for that is that there is those who believe in government, in big government, in government mandates, are less likely to question public health officials. They're less likely to question those who are authority figures in government or in medicine. And those who believe in less government and are questioning some of these laws are more likely to be more skeptical about the safety and effectiveness of these FDA-approved vaccines that are promoted by the Centers for Disease
Control. And this is so interesting, Barbara, because, and we're not talking about abortion today, but I just want to make a parallel here that there are those that are advocating for abortion, and let's keep the government out of this, is between a woman and her doctor, and no government. But when it comes to mandates and shots and that sort of thing, they bring the government into this. We want the government,
right.
And the government needs to do this.
Yeah, I mean, it isn't. Vaccines are really almost in their own category. There is a sort of this mystique, this sacred quality that has the way that people have been taught to view vaccines, that they were going to save humanity from all disease and death. And so people who want to believe that's true and want to believe that these government mandates and these government programs are completely, well, that everybody involved in it is A, doing it for the right reasons, and is following the science, et cetera, they have a disincentive to believe that there's anything wrong. And so it's a lot about denial. Because if you actually follow the science, if you actually look at the studies that have been done to buttress these vaccine, one-size-fits-all vaccine policies, you find that there's a lot of gaps in the science. And that has been pointed out by the Institute of Medicine National Academy of Sciences committees repeatedly, including a recent report by the National Academy of Sciences that talks about the gaps in science regarding COVID shots.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, the other thing that I believe is causing skepticism and is a growing questioning of these mandates is the growth in the vaccine schedule since 1983, the childhood vaccine schedule.
And Barbara,
when my children were being vaccinated in the 70s and 80s, the children were told, the doctors were told, to give children 23 doses of 7 vaccines between 2 months old and age 6. There was one oral polio vaccine shot, and there were 2 combination shots, the DPT that bundled diphtheria, pertussis, and tetanus together, and MMR that bundled measles, mumps, and rubella together. And I think, you know, parents really need to understand that when they take their infant or their young child to a doctor for a routine vaccinations, that the doctor may give the child three shots, but the shots contain multiple vaccines, anywhere from, in some cases, 4 to 6 vaccines in one shot. And so there's a difference between vaccines and doses and shots.
Yeah.
And right now, the CDC childhood vaccine schedule is 73 doses of 18 vaccines by age 6, with 53 doses of 16 vaccines given between the day of birth and age 6.
Oh, my.
Okay, so you also have to remember in these numbers I've just given that now there are biological products that are labeled vaccines that are actually not traditional vaccines. For example, in those doses is an RSV monoclonal antibody shot that's given to the young babies. That's not a vaccine. It's a monoclonal antibody that they have labeled a vaccine for the purpose of putting it into that schedule. Another product, the mRNA COVID shot, is not really a vaccine in the traditional sense of the word, because that biological product manipulates and disrupts cell function to produce the SARS-CoV-2 synthetic spike protein. It's a different mechanism than what the other vaccines that we usually have, used has. So bottom line, total of 18 government recommend vaccines for children, and each of these vaccines are given in a different series of doses. Like DTaP vaccine is given in 5 doses. MMR vaccine is 2 doses. But many of them are bundled into combination shots. And so if you want to have your child only get, say, 4 vaccines on the same day, then you need to find out what your doctor, what vaccine products your doctor is carrying, because doctors will use different manufacturers. And depending upon the manufacturer and the shot that's given, you could have, like I say, 4 to 6 vaccines. The GlaxoSmithKline Pediarix vaccine combines diphtheria, tetanus, acellular pertussis, hepatitis B, and inactivated polio into one shot. And then you've got Merck Sanofi Pasteur Vaxcellus vaccine that combines 6 vaccines into one shot. But your body of your baby doesn't respond to shots. It responds to the different vaccines in those combination shots that are given on the same day.
Wow. Wow. Barbara Lo Fisher is with us today. And friends, again, she is president of the National Vaccine Information Center and talking about the childhood vax schedule. And also, many of you are facing this right now as far as your child back to school and the immunizations that are being requested or mandated coming on your plate as well. What's a parent to do? We're going to take a quick break. And following the break, we're going to come back and talk more about K through 12, what parents are facing at this point, and certainly what options are available to them. I know some parents have refused this and has also then been refused other medical care as well. So we'll get into a number of issues in this next segment, and also we'll be having a time for you to call in with your questions as it relates to immunizations as well, focusing primarily on the back to school issue and childhood, but certainly we know that the vaccination as a whole is a topic of concern to many. We'll be back with more info after the break. You're listening to Crosstalk.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist and creation researcher with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, how primitive was early man?
Chris, early man was never primitive in an evolutionary sense at all. In the beginning, man was created in the image of God with great ability, even able to communicate with God face to face. All this was before sin, however, and we've been deteriorating ever since. Evidence continues to accumulate that long ago man was highly sophisticated, evidently even performing brain surgery. Skulls have been found with holes drilled in them for surgical reasons, and the person had survived. No, Chris, there never were primitive humans. There were some with less technology and not much education, but Stone Age cultures exist today. This is a level of civilization, but not an evolutionary stage, and it's been that way ever since, back in Genesis.
For free information on creation, visit us on the web at www.icr.org.
guest today is Barbara Lowe Fisher, president of the National Vaccine Information Center, talking primarily about, immunizations, but back to school with an emphasis on it. Barbara, I was on the CDC site and the American Academy of Pediatrics, saw the recommendation of immunizations for birth through 6, then 7 through 18. They also have a recommended list for adults, and absolutely amazed at how many shots are recommended in the first 6 months of life. And then as parents now are sending their children to school or some even for daycare, they're being faced with this. How does a parent navigate these K through 12 vaccine requirements? I mean, some parents, as I said, are facing this, even putting their child into daycare.
Well, first of all, you need to realize that there is a difference between recommendations by the CDC and states' school requirements. All states do not require students to receive all federally recommended vaccines, but most states, at a minimum, require hepatitis B, DTaP, which is diphtheria, tetanus, and acellular pertussis, polio, MMR, which is measles, mumps, and rubella, and varicella, which is chickenpox. Most states require at least 9 vaccines for students, and some require more. Daycare children sometimes have more because they're younger, okay, when they enter school, or in the daycare, I'm sorry. Now, there are public and private schools and daycares, and the public schools usually adhere to the requirements of the state, but private schools and daycares can require other vaccines and can also not recognize exemptions that are recognized by the state or the public schools.
Hmm.
This is particularly true for parochial schools because they are not recognizing the religious exemption. So there are different exemptions in different states. 5 states do not have religious exemption at all or a philosophical exemption, only medical. And those states are California, New York, West Virginia, Connecticut, and Maine. They do not have religious or philosophical or conscientious belief exemption. The medical exemption, which all states have, is extremely difficult to get because in the last 15 years, the federal health officials and the doctor organizations have restricted the medical exemption so that almost nothing qualifies as a reason not to vaccinate a child, literally. There's almost no contraindications to vaccines anymore under a medical exemption. There are 15 states that allow philosophical and/or religious exemption, 15 states that allow both of those exemptions. Those states are Washington, Oregon, Utah, North Dakota, Wisconsin, Michigan, Minnesota, Arizona, Arkansas, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Louisiana, Indiana, Texas, and Oklahoma. So there are 15 states. If you live in one of those 15 states, you have the medical, philosophical, and religious. It depends upon how the law is worded. So you should go to NVIC.org, our website. We have a map of the states, and we have the laws for each state. And you can go in there and look at what your state daycare or public schools require, and then you're able to know how you can get, if you want an exemption, you're able to know how you can get that exemption. A lot of people are starting to homeschool their children. Mm-hmm. I mean, this has been true really since we've been around, since the 1980s, when, you know, parents who lived in states that had very restrictive laws regarding vaccination decided they were going to homeschool their children.
Yeah.
There are some states that do have vaccine requirements for homeschooled children. And again, you can find that information on our website.
And at the same time, we have to keep in mind what happens after school, and that is for many, they enter college, and there's a number of colleges that have requirements with certain, you know, vaccination requirements.
There's no question that colleges have become much more interested in requiring vaccines, and this became a real issue during the COVID pandemic declaration, because there were a number of colleges and universities that were requiring the COVID shot, whereas our organization had worked so hard to educate lawmakers in the states since 2010, there was not one state that voted to require the COVID shot for school children, that is for elementary, middle, and high school students. But these private universities, there were a number of private universities that did require the COVID shot for the college student entry. And I know there were people who were calling us and they were deciding that they weren't going to send their child to a school that required the COVID shot. So you really have to pay attention to what the requirements are, whether it's for a young child entering a public school or a private school, or whether it's a college.
You know, Barbara, there's another school matter that has surfaced, and this is where students have been given the COVID-19 shot without the consent and even against the wishes of a parent. I mean, they will accept, you know, consent from a child. We understand even the U.S. Department of Education and Department of Health and Human Services is introducing a vaccine-related curriculum to many classrooms across the country. But in some cases, we have young people taking this without the knowledge or consent of their parents.
That's right. There was a Supreme Court of Vermont threw out a lawsuit recently brought by the parents of a 6-year-old boy who was given a COVID shot at school without their consent. And that what the court did was said, well, this really belongs in federal court, not in state court, because the 2005 Federal Public Readiness and Emergency Preparedness Act, called the PREP Act, superseded state law. Now, the PREP Act was passed by Congress after 9/11. And it was part of a series of laws that became law that gave expanded authority to public health officials during an emergency declaration, gave them authority to use countermeasures such as vaccines, and it gave immunity to all who make and sell and administer vaccines that were used to address that emergency. And so what this Vermont Supreme Court said was that the school that gave the shot to this child, this COVID shot, without the parent's consent, were immune from prosecution because of the PREP Act. And other state courts have come to the same conclusion. There was a 14-year-old boy in North Carolina who got a COVID shot without the parent's consent. And that North Carolina court also said, sorry, the PREP Act takes precedence here. Well, clearly we need to repeal the PREP Act, because it has given way, way too much power to public health officials and to, you know, anybody who gives a vaccine during an emergency declaration. They don't have to get the consent of parents.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Congress has made some mistakes in terms of some of these laws that they passed after 9/11
mm-hmm.
that try to extend immunity to the manufacturers, to the anybody who gives vaccines. Nobody's accountable. I mean, if something happens to those children because of that COVID shot that the parents didn't agree to, you know, it's the parents and the child who are left, having to deal with it, not the doctor who gave it or the school who gave it or the manufacturer who made the vaccine. It always comes down to the average person who has to bear the brunt of the consequences.
And that ties into another topic here, too, and that is the parents need to be aware that there are actually vaccine companies that conduct their own studies claiming, you know, demonstrating the safety of their new vaccines, but we understand they're carefully designed, conducted to hide the toxicity of the vaccines. And we keep hearing, you know, in today we hear the words, the cries of transparency all the time, but this is quite the opposite.
Well, you know, there's no question that there's been a lowering of the standards for proof of safety and effectiveness of vaccines at the FDA. I mean, I've followed this for 4 decades, and they keep lowering the standards. Certainly, we know that the COVID shot, the manufacturers only had to prove 50% efficacy in preventing severe disease, COVID disease. They did not have to prove that it prevented infection and transmission. And, of course, most people believed that this COVID biological, this shot, was going to be like other vaccines that had been advertised as preventing infection and transmission. And then the safety, I mean, it was a fast-track shot. It was like only 9 months of study. And, you know, still, they're just under an emergency use authorization. Still the children are being vaccinated under an emergency use authorization with a COVID shot that hasn't been fully licensed for them. So there's definitely a lowering of the standards. And I think people just need to beware that when they go to a doctor's office, if they're going to get vaccinated, they need to become as fully informed as they can about what the side effects are, what the efficacy or the effectiveness is, and really think about, is this vaccine necessary for me or my child?
And coupled with this, their parents are having to deal with the doctors who have told them that unless you have these recommended vaccinations, unless you have this, we will not be able to treat your child. We'll not be able to see them for appointments. We'll not give other medical procedures to them. And that's kind of a pressure being placed on parents, too.
Oh, it's been that for a long time. We have something on MVIC.org, our website, called the Cry for Vaccine Freedom Wall. And in there, you can read firsthand descriptions of people who are being threatened and coerced by doctors in doctor's offices and thrown out of doctor's offices because they will not follow the order of the doctor to get, whether it's a COVID shot or a hepatitis B shot, or, you know, these doctors are acting like policemen in denying children medical care and throwing them out of the office if the parents don't agree to get all of the vaccines that the doctor says the child should have. They won't even discuss, many of them, an alternate schedule. Like if the parent wants to give the child just 4 vaccines on one day instead of 10, they won't even discuss that. It's like my way or the highway. And I think this is also contributing to the decline in trust in doctors and hospitals and medical facilities that push this very coercive, oppressive, one-size-fits-all approach to vaccination. Because the thing is that we're not all the same. We don't all respond the same way to vaccination. And we hear from so many parents whose children have already had reactions, severe reactions, seizures, a severe decline in health after vaccination, and they can't find a doctor to accept them in the practice because they will not follow the CDC schedule.
Friends, you're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. We want to have some extended time here to take your questions. We know that you no doubt have many of them, and we'd like to limit. We don't want you to get on your pulpit and start expounding today, but share your legitimate questions with our guest here today, Barbara Lowe Fisher. Our telephone number to Crosstalk is 800-733-9829. That's 800-733-9829. We'll take your questions today here on the program. Our main emphasis is that of the childhood or back-to-school immunizations and matters that are unfolding there. That's our main issue, though, but if you had some questions here on the COVID shot here and so forth as well, we'll take those. But again, not looking for you to pontificate. Just ask your questions today, 800-733-9829. The website for our guest that she gave, nvic.org. NVIC.org. Back in a minute here on Crosstalk.
We are being told by scientists that our planet will be destroyed in 10 years if we don't do something about climate change. Well, the VCY Bookstore and Outreach Center is celebrating our 28th anniversary this month and offering to you the brand new book by Ken Ham and Jessica DeFord called Climate Change for Kids and Parents Too. This is more than just a book. It's a roadmap for families seeking to understand and engage one of the defining challenges of our time. Filled with 80 glossy pages, brilliant illustrations, photos, scientific, logical, and theological truths, this resource will empower concerned parents and curious children. This intersection of science, scripture, and logic will provide understanding of this issue from a biblical worldview. Climate Change for Kids and Parents Too is 41% off, but only through August 31st. Order at 888-722-4829. Online at vcy.com.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Barbara Lowe Fisher with us today from the National Vaccine Information Center, NVIC.org. And they also have their NVICAdvocacy.org portal as well to stay abreast of what's going on in states pertaining to this matter. Just before we get to our first call here, Barbara, I mentioned earlier about the curricula that is now being introduced in classrooms across the country on vaccinations and if you will, you know, certainly to influence or indoctrinate students in that regard. Does a parent have rights? Does a student have rights as to whether or not that they receive this curricula?
Well, students as young as in third grade are being given information on vaccines, and I think it's going to be pretty much one-sided information. But under the Protection of People Rights Amendment Act, PPRA, parents can request copies of instructional materials that their children are getting in schools. And parental consent is required before a school can require students to give information on their personal religious and political beliefs and affiliations. And the schools are supposed to notify parents of the ability for students to opt out of any non-emergency invasive physical exam, including injections, which is, of course, is those two cases we talked about. That was what that was about. So the Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act, FERPA, also prohibits certain kinds of student information from being shared by schools with others without consent of parents. So you can take a look on our website. We have information on those laws and see what your rights are in terms of what your student is being taught.
Okay, let's go to the phone lines again, friends. We're taking questions today, not looking for you to pontificate on things, but questions here for our guests. Let's begin with Kevin in Kentucky. Kevin, you're on the air.
Yes, Jim. I was just wondering if you all have a list of doctors that are compiled for parents to know if we have doctors that are not following all these guidelines, and where can we find that list? And I'll take my answer off.
Okay, thank you. And we have a hard time hearing you because you're in speakerphone driving there. But asking, is there a list of doctors that do not necessarily, you know, take carte blanche everything here from the CDC?
You know, the problem is that doctors have been really hammered by medical licensing boards when they give exemptions, like medical exemptions, when they advertise that they don't give vaccines, et cetera. So there's been a lot of reluctance by doctors to put up their names on a list because they are being persecuted by these medical licensing boards. And so we don't have a list on NVIC.org, no.
Okay, thank you. You can check with your own doctor in that regard. William in East Troy, Wisconsin, you're on the air.
Yes, Jim. Barbara, thank you so much for bringing this topic up today. I've been asking this question of my family who disagree with the COVID shot information that we've given them from your site. But the question is, how many vaccines do I actually need to take to be healthy? It just seems like it's a ludicrous amount of vaccines that are not helping, but they're harming. And the same administration now that is telling us that we need all these vaccines are letting people into the country who we don't know if they're even have the COVID shot or what vaccines or what they've been vaccinated for. I mean, where does it end? First, it's a 6-foot distancing, wear one mask, take, 58 shots for your young infant before they're 6 years old. I mean, how many vaccines do I need to be healthy?
Okay, thank you, William.
Well, of course, that question, people have always asked me, well, which vaccine should I take? And, of course, medical decisions are very personal, and you have to look at your medical history of your family, of your child, of yourself, when you're considering getting a vaccine or, indeed, engaging any other medical intervention. You can't answer that question. Somebody who is living on a farm and say they like to run barefoot through a field with cow manure there and rusty nails, they're at much greater risk of contracting tetanus from a puncture wound that is contaminated with tetanus than somebody who lives in a penthouse in New York City. your risk of contracting a disease is in direct proportion to your risk of exposure to the disease and your own personal genetic, epigenetic history. You know, it's just, it's an individual decision. It's complex, and people need to understand their medical history, and they need to be able to find a doctor they trust who will help them make these decisions too.
Thanks for the call. Tony is our next caller. Hi, Tony. Tony, you're on the air.
I'd like to make a quick comment about the vaccinations, Jim.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, at this time, when I went to Walmart to
get
can
I tell you what, do you have a question for our guest today, Tony? Tony, do you have a question for our guest?
Well, other than the fact that they made me loopy, but I didn't get sick from them, but I had to go back and get another one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And after I got the fourth of the update, it made me loopy again. But I never lost any my physical.
You're referring to the COVID shot?
No, the influenza, the one for the adult. Chicken pox, and then this upper respiratory.
Okay, thank you for that. And again, I want to keep, you know, to questions here for today. But side effects are part of this, and people are affected differently by these, are they not, Barbara?
Well, absolutely. We're not all the same.
Right.
We don't all respond the same way to vaccination or indeed any other drug or medical intervention. Some of us are more vulnerable than others to having an adverse event following vaccination. Yeah. And that's one of the objections I have to these laws, is that they take a one-size-fits-all approach. And you have these parents coming into doctors and saying, my child had a severe reaction after a previous shot, and I don't want to get that shot again, and then they're thrown out of the office.
Right.
There's no respect for individuality. It's not personalized. It's a very, I believe, cruel policy to throw people under the bus because of the genes they were born with, or their medical history and their vulnerabilities.
Thank you, Tony, for the call. We've got Adam next in Westfield. You're on the air, Adam.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. I got a question for your guest. This is about the Shingrix vaccine, the latest version for shingles. I won't get into how my wife was coerced into getting this vaccine, but she is suffering. This all happened right before COVID blew apart, and she has been suffering from an autoimmune condition that is like a hyper-rheumatoid arthritis and psoriatic arthritis condition. In your experience, have you heard much about this? I cannot find a whole lot of information about this, and very few people have I found that have reported this.
Address that here first, Barbara. Go ahead and answer.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question that vaccines can cause immune-mediated neurological dysfunction and immune dysfunction that can take different forms. And the shingles vaccine is no exception. Again, you may have 98 people who don't have a reaction to a shingles shot, and then you have, you know, two who have their immune systems are not able to handle it, and they go on to have chronic immune dysfunction and sometimes neurological dysfunction. And the gaps in the science are huge, the vaccine science. These manufacturers and these academicians in these universities that are funded by pharma and government do not want to do the research to look for the high-risk factors for who is vulnerable to having these reactions, because, again, they want everybody to take the shot.
Yeah. You had a second question, Adam?
I just had a quick question. Whose responsibility is it to file a VAERS report? The hospital in which this has taken place after a long time has admitted that that is the cause of her injury.
The 1986 National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act has a federal requirement, a safety provision for reporting, that requires vaccine providers to report to VAERS whenever there is an adverse event associated with a vaccination. If you go onto the CDC's website, they say that anything, even if the provider doesn't believe that the event is connected to the vaccine, they are still required to, they're still supposed to report.
Wow.
So the provider is supposed to make the gives a shot, and if it's, if a provider is working for a hospital or working for a pharmacy or whatever, they are supposed to report.
Wow. Thank
but
you.
But you
okay,
can report.
I thank you so much for that information.
Great. Thank you.
Yes.
And I know that there are those, though, and we've had people call into this program that were in the medical profession at the time with COVID shots and said, we're told not to. We're told not to report.
Well, that's a violation of federal law.
Mm. Wow.
This was the deal in that law, and I helped work on the safety provisions of that law in the early 1980s, that, you know, we were the law was supposed to both prevent, was supposed to prevent or minimize vaccine reactions. It was supposed to prevent against vaccine reactions. And part of that is the duty of the provider to keep a permanent record of every vaccine given, including the manufacturer's name and lot number, to give the person who is being vaccinated, or in, specifically the parent of a child being vaccinated, vaccine information about the vaccine and the disease before the vaccination takes place, and report adverse events to the Federal Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System.
Hmm.
And that's why we have, for example, on the COVID shot, there's this reporting system has taken in over 1.6 million adverse event reports.
Yeah, and the last they've updated right now I see is August 2nd. Let's go to Carolyn in Iowa. Carolyn, you're on the air.
Oh, it's Marilyn, but thank
Marilyn.
You so much,
okay,
Jim
thank
and
you.
Barbara. This may not be the right kind of question, but I've heard that the mRNA has been put in the flu vaccinations now, or could be. Do they have to give the ingredients on other than the COVID vaccines? Are they required? I mean,
okay.
Is it possible that they're doing this? And what? I guess there's nothing we could do about it if it's approved.
Well, first of all, the only mRNA vaccines that are have been approved are the Pfizer and Moderna mRNA COVID shots. However, what you may have heard is that they're working on mRNA influenza vaccines. In fact, the mRNA platform is the chosen platform at this point. When you go into the medical literature, you can see that there are so many vaccines that are in existence now that they want to turn into mRNA vaccines. And I believe that going forward, that is the platform they're going to use for the new vaccines. And I'm concerned about is because the mRNA biological product, that platform, is a, what I call a cell disruptor biological. It literally disrupts the functioning of the cell. And, you know, how many times are you going to do that? How many times are you going to inject a product into a person to disrupt cell function before you're going to break down the immune system?
Thank you for the call. We're up against a break, and we'll take more of your questions following. This is Crosstalk on VCY America, our guest website, nvic.org.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brennan House. Politicians cannot get it together, can they? There are so few things that they are able to actually solve, particularly on a national level, right? Yet there are a group of, well, self-professing Christians that think they're going to take back dominion of the whole world. They're going to kick Satan out of the world and take dominion. How's that working out for them, by the way? They've been saying this for years. Is the world becoming more Christian friendly? No. Christian persecution and murder is up, way up, all over the globe. Here's the good news, folks. Revelation chapter 5 says that the Lord is handed a scroll by God. It's a will. It's a testament. It's a title deed. And it was won at the cross. And now it's going to be acted on. And guess what? The Lord God himself is going to come and he is going to kick Satan out of this world with his demons and establish his thousand-year millennial reign. And that's what the Lord's Prayer is about. Pray, thy kingdom come. We'll be right back.
This is Crosstalk on VCY America, and talking today with Barbara Lowe Fisher, who is president of the National Vaccine Information Center, founded this back in 1982. She's been in this a long time, has done much, much education and information on this topic, and we're taking your questions today here on Crosstalk. Our lines are packed. We'll cover as much ground as we can. Holding the longest has been Steve in Pennsylvania. Steve, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi there. I just want to make a quick comment, quick question. Quick comment is this. My daughter, unfortunately, was vaccine damaged by the COVID vax, and she suffers neurological damage. In fact, we just came from court this morning with the Social Security Administration to obtain benefits for her. That's my comment. Quick question is this. I'm planning on running for school board in the local area in 2025. And I was wondering, Barbara, is there anything that I could do as a candidate, maybe a potential school board member, to stop vaccinations from even being allowed to be given to students in a given school system?
I was just going to say, before you finish your sentence, that would be the place to start, is that the school would be prohibited from giving shots on site because, you know, there's not – is the school going to report to VAERS, you know, when there's an adverse event? But as a school board member, you certainly could forward that. That would be a great place to start.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you.
Great, thank you for the call. We've got Priscilla calling from Soldiers Grove, Wisconsin. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Yes, I have been reading different articles. One is from National Right to Life about having the aborted baby tissues being extracted from the babies born live on purpose and not using any painkiller on the babies, and then using those tissues in making the vaccines. And they are actually in all of the vaccines, but hidden from the ingredients list, but they are in the list for some of them. Okay, and I'd like you to comment on that.
Great. Thank you. Barbara?
Well, certainly fetal cell lines have been used over the years. I mean, certainly probably the most famous is rubella vaccine, but there are others, the varicella vaccine. There are others that have that. I am not aware, I have not delved into the issue of fetuses being born live and their cells extracted. I just am not knowledgeable about it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you so much for the call. Let's go next to Zoltan in Michigan. You're on the air.
Yes, I have several questions, but they're all yes, no, quite short. First one is this, okay? The clot shot was rolled out based on, given an EUA approval based on a lie that there was no therapeutics. Yes or no?
It was based on the fact there was no therapeutics. Well, that's why they did the EUA. They said that there was no other treatment, and so therefore
correct.
They justified
that.
That
was not correct,
EUA, yes.
Was it?
Mm-hmm.
That was not correct. The second thing is that this is continued, and the question is, are these boosters all EUA also still?
They just approved the new formula for the COVID shot that's going to be given this year under an EUA.
So it's still EUA?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The new one is because they're saying is that they can just use the procedure that they did with the previous ones, and it's kind of like grandfathering it in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the whole thing was based on the false premise that there was no therapeutics when there was ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, many other things that were very therapeutic.
They don't recognize that. As we all know, they downplayed the effectiveness of those treatments and in fact went after doctors who prescribed them. I mean, doctors lost their licenses because they were prescribing ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine. So, you know, they're not admitting that those are treatments that work.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Zoltan, for the call. By the way, just pertaining to our other caller, there is a group that has been tracking the use of aborted children in science and many related issues. You can just go to the cogforlife.org, cogforlife.org, and look more into that as well. It stands for Children of God for Life.org. Let's go to, next in Kentucky, we have Lloyd calling. Hi, Lloyd, you're on the air.
Of God.
Lloyd, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, Jim, thank you. My wife and I did not take the shot, but we did have COVID, and we've heard of all the hurtful effects of the shot. Are there long-standing hurts also by having had the man-made virus?
No question. There are a lot of people who have had immune and brain dysfunction following this sometimes repeated infection with this man-made virus. And I think this is one of the, when you look at what has happened, you have to look at both the people who have been hurt by this bioweapon virus, in addition to the people who have been hurt by the vaccine that contains, that forces the body to make the spike protein from this man-made virus. It's a catastrophe I don't even know how you measure it in terms of the billions of people in the world who have suffered either from the vaccine or from the disease.
Lloyd, thank you for the call. Barbara, we're down to just over half a minute. What would you like to leave with our listeners today?
Well, as I always do, that we have to be informed consumers. We have to understand our own health and the health of our children, and we have to make informed decisions about medical interventions, including use of vaccines. And we have to have the freedom to make decisions without being coerced or threatened or punished for the decision we make. And it's the reason that MBIC in 2010 did launch the MBIC Advocacy Portal. We've been working in the states because vaccine laws are state laws, and it's important to get involved, because if you don't do something and wait for someone else to do it, you know, that's how a country deteriorates. We have to all be active in protecting our rights and our freedoms, and I think the right to informed consent is a human right. It's been defined as a human right, and certainly the right to autonomy is a natural right, a right given to us by God.
We're going to have to leave
and
it there, Barbara.
We should fight for it.
Thank you so very much for being with us today. Their website, nvic.org. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.